Major, John Anderson Major, when we were first acquaint, your locks were like the raven, your bonny brow was brent. But now your brow is belt, John, and your locks are like the snow. But blessings on your frosty pow, John Anderson, my Joe. John Anderson, my Joe, we'd climb the hill together, and money's a county deal. Had we yet another? Now we mun totter down, John, and hand we'll go to sleep together at the fet. John Anderson, my Joe, John Anderson, my
lovely recording there from 4 or 5 years back, Eddie Reader, from an album called Sings the Songs of Robert Burns, and that was her version of John Anderson, My Joe. I understand you've actually been corresponding with or trying to correspond with Eddie Reader at the moment.
Yes, I attempted today to contact her to see if I could use borrow an article of hers to go on my website entitled What Robert Burns Means to Me. And I feel pretty good that she will go along with it, because several other people at this time have done the same thing. Professor David Purdy, Professor Gerald Carruthers, and Dr. Ken Simpson, all of these people have already agreed to allow me to put it up on my website.
So let's talk a little bit about your website.
Okay.
This is all part of the electricscotland.com website.
Correct.
So what have you got on there, and why would people want to look it up?
Well, overall, www.electricscotland.com, run by Alistair McIntyre out of Canada, enjoys averaging 2.25 million hits a month. And we like to think we get a few of those when they turn in over there if they are interested in Burns, because we have a section over there entitled Robert Burns Lives, in which we ask lay people and scholars to write articles for us and let us post them there. We have some of the greatest scholars, particularly Dr. G. Ross Roy from the University of South Carolina, who is probably, if not one of the top two or three scholars in the world on Burns. I would be hard-pressed to tell you who the other two were. They'd be a juggernaut with so many of them. But we have that. And then on the other side, I also interview authors who have a book out that I will take and review it. And I've never been turned down by an author to interview by way of email. I make it easy for them, and I'll send them 10, 12 questions, and I pledge to them that I will not rebut anything they say, so that they have the freedom to say what they want to say without worrying about me having the last word. I want them to have the last word. And the only two people that I have not been able to interview are the two people I was not able to get in touch with. Dan Brown was one when I did the Da Vinci Code. And the other, I apologize for her name, but anyway, she did a great book on English that I thought my high school teacher would be very proud of me for even attempting to review it.
not East Shoots and Leaves, is it?
Yes, it was.
Well, it's funny, I've heard people actually comment that she may know some grammar, but she doesn't know as much grammar as she thinks she knows.
Yeah, but it is a great popular.
It's very popular.
Attempt.
Absolutely.
And people will read it, and for that reason, it should be read. It should be listened.
True.
To.
True. Yeah. True.
But I particularly was kind of put off because her PR person let me know she was too busy to talk to me, and I said, okay, well, when she does her sequel, I just won't review it. And those 2.25 million people, and whatever percentage turnover our way, we'll let them determine whether.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So you obviously have been collecting books on Burns for some time, and I believe you've amassed a considerable collection.
Not really. I haven't been collecting them a long time. When I started on my Scottish pilgrimage, I wanted to learn everything I could about Scotland. My wife and I have been to Scotland. Coming up this summer would be our 16th trip. I've bought land in Scotland. I've sold land in Scotland. I still have land in Scotland. I'm proud to say that I don't consider myself a Sassenach. When I go and visit over there, I have friends who are there. They welcome us into their homes. We correspond. I look to them for advice on what is going on in Scotland and help when I need it regarding some papers I may be writing. We love Scotland. And my folks, even though they come from the Isle of Jura, I found that the biggest part of Clanshaw comes from right below Inverness, and so we spend a little bit of time there. And this summer, I will take my two grandchildren, 8 and 6 years old, that I've been promising them to take them to Scotland. And you may be interested that my little granddaughter, Sterling, who is 6, said to someone the other day, and it was picked up in the Sunday Times, that my papa promised to take me to see where Robert Burns was born, and papa always does what he says. So I found I had to dig deep and get out 2 more tickets to take her this and her brother Ian this summer.
And her name is Sterling.
Sterling.
So that's a good Inverness name.
Named after the city.
Named after the city.
Yeah. I didn't have anything to do with that. Now, that was her mama and her daddy, and they had both visited there when they were single, and that's how Sterling came about.
So along the way, you started collecting books.
Yes, I started buying books, reading Scottish history, and spent a lot of time with Bonnie Prince Charlie. I probably have 100 books on Bonnie Prince Charlie, and for 10 years, I didn't read anything else but Scottish books. And then I realized that that was not good either, so I started reading other books, and now I find myself dividing it about equally. I have probably over 4,000 Scottish books.
Goodness.
I have a good guess would be over 1,000 books on Burns alone. It's kind of hard to believe. Here's a man who wrote only one book, and even though there were other editions that came out later, there were just a few poems added to it. But his classic, the Kilmarnock edition that came out in 1786, I was able to find one of those about 1 a.m. one morning while just trolling the internet.
And my goodness.
Went up and woke up my wife and said, I found it. And she said, are you crazy? It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, look. And she said, my goodness, you found it. And I said, yeah, now we got to buy it. And so we did. And
excellent.
So we have that. And I have pretty well near all of the early collections up through 1850 on here. So. I have a lot of Burnsiana.
Mm-hmm.
Burnsiana, odd scraps of things and little pieces about Burns. And that's where some of the $157 million comes from. It'd be ashtrays and trinkets and all this stuff. So anything that looks durable, I'll buy it. And so when you walk into my library, there is a Burns room. Nothing but Burns in there. And I plan to take Jim Flannery with me over there in a couple of weeks to see it, and you're invited also.
Well, thank you.
You'd like to see it.
Well, tell us about how the Burns Suppers got started.
Okay. Go back with me to the summer of 1801, and 9 of his friends who knew him decided to get together and talk about Burns and reminisce about Burns. And when we wonder today how all this got started and see all the beautiful rooms that the dinners are held in, I just am back from Charlotte speaking at the Charlotte Country Club, and it's so beautifully adorned, and the men are so dressed up, almost peacock strutting types with their kilts and their trews, and the women are dressed to the nines. And you think about that little group of 9 men who got there, and they feasted that evening on sheep's head and haggis. They dined in the Eyre home where the poet was born at that particular time. This was 5 years after he died, by the way. At that particular time, it was serving as a rural tavern, and they read to a haggis, which Burns had written. They toasted Burns. The account that is in the Burns Chronicle says 3 times 3. for every toast. So I don't know how they walked out of there, but I'm assuming they did. They had a painting of Burns that was on the board that on the other side was a former sign for the Poets' House that displayed that it was a tavern. And they resolved to meet again each year. And basically they ate haggis, they recited his poems, sang his songs, and raised a glass to the memory of their departed friend. And all I can say to that is it sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Hmm. So if somebody were to say, tell me three key things about Burns that I should be aware of.
Can I add one other word along that
Absolutely.
Line? Absolutely. The main man responsible for that was a gentleman named Reverend Hamilton Paul. There's no record of what he said. There's no record was kept. He had no idea what he was unleashing in that little house that day, that first Burns supper that was held 208 years ago. And I must confess that he is a hero of mine. From these nine men in 1801, the clubs are meeting all over the world on January 25th, or either the Friday before or the Saturday before, mm-hmm. and hundreds of thousands will raise their glass in Burns. And they have been criticized, too, because one wag said that more drunken men praise Burns than any other man in the world. But this was the beginning back then to be such a big event now. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, not at all, no. So, three things that the average person should know about Robert Burns.
Well,
what would spring to mind?
One, you have to realize that the little house he was born in, today will become a multimillion-dollar center next to it within the next couple of years. The thing about it is it started when Burns was born there, and it has grown to this 250th anniversary celebration that will literally bring in the millions of dollars that we have already alluded to. The mm-hmm. other is this little kid grew up and wrote a book. And as I stated earlier, he wrote only one book, poems chiefly in the Scottish dialect. And he was in all kinds of trouble and was thinking about going to the islands to get away from the trouble. But his countrymen bought out the 612 copies that were printed. And then someone talked him into going to Edinburgh for another edition, and this became the Edinburgh two-state edition, in which two different times they ran off the copies of the Kilmarnock edition that became known as the Skinking and the Stinking Edinburgh edition, only because it's supposed to be skinking, which means watery, talking about the haggis, and when they did the second one, they didn't put the print back in, and it came out stinking. So today, rare books owners will distinguish between which one is which by the stinking or the skinking.
Hey.
You know, and the other thing that I would say that Burns has just been celebrated so much. I do not get into the idolatry factor and the bardology that people talk to. I know what he means to me. It's an opportunity to get together with your friends. It's an opportunity to celebrate. It's an opportunity to have good food and to have a drink, where you might have 200 or 300 at a fancy get together. I talked to a gentleman the other night who had 30 guests in his home, and he celebrated his own Burns night there. So it when you take all three and put them together, you just cannot forget his wife, Jean Armour. She loved him. She took care of him. She was aware of the times that he was having with other women. She actually took a child in her own home that he had fathered. And to me, this would be a ticket out the door. If some of my friends or myself tried that, we would be gone in a New York second. And her concept was this. Poor Robbie. He should have had two wives.
Let's take a break and listen to his most famous song, and we'll be right back. This is Auld Lang Syne. You're listening to The Celtic Show on WRFG Atlanta. John Falstaff with you. The time is 1 minute past 6. We have one more hour of great Celtic music.
Should all the acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all the acquaintance be forgot and all the land signs?